Just as I knew he would, he's on the line with us here this morning. Congressman Jim Clyburn, how are you doing this morning?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little cold up here. Feels
boy,
like...
I tell you, I've been reading about you guys. It's bad enough down here, and I got to go north to Atlanta tomorrow. It's not going to be a fun trip.
Well, it's not going to be a fun trip, but it certainly is great to have you call in here this morning. I wanted to ask you, first off, how's your book doing, Blessed Experiences, out there?
Well, the book is doing very well. The paperback was released last month, the audio as well, and the sales have been brisk, and I'm very pleased.
Well, that is terrific. It is a great read. I think everybody should take the time to read it. And I understand, didn't you do the audio book? Are you the reader?
I did the audio myself. It took me north of 40 hours to get it done. because, you know, it's kind of interesting when you're doing it yourself. You start anticipating things you really didn't write down. it took a little time to redo stuff, but we finally got it done in my own voice, and I'm very pleased with it.
Well, then maybe I take that other things came to mind, so there'll be blessed experiences too.
Well, we've contemplated that. I don't know if and when we'll find time to do it, but I've already started taking notes on what may be a sequel. We'll see how that goes.
Absolutely. Well, I got to ask you another question. You know, we've got the what's going on with South Carolina State, and I can remember talking to you on the phone, I think it was last year, and I asked you if being a college president was something you wanted to do, and you told me that that itch had passed. Any change of heart now?
No, not at all. I told someone just last night, I was with some South Carolina State alumni down in Beaufort, and I said to them, there is a great benefit to be coming north of 70. You get to the point where you just don't give a hoot about a lot of things, and going back to hard work is another one of them.
I can understand that. I'd like to be able to say that, but I can't yet. But it does look like the House Ways and Means has decided that they are going to work with South Carolina State. They are going to make some changes. What do you feel about the direction that they have done so far?
I think the proviso passed by the Ways and Means Committee, and it was unanimous, is a step in the right direction. I applaud what they have done. I think that there are two things which must always stay present in any school. One of them is accountability. The other one is credibility. You got to be accountable to the people who are funding you, and you got to be creditable to the people who are evaluating you. And I think that the current administration down at South Carolina State, including the policymakers, have lost all credibility with the evaluators, the people who determine the what we call whether or not the school is standing on solid academic footing. And I can tell you from my own experiences in Washington, the evaluators do not have much faith in the current administration at South Carolina State. And so I think the Busing Control Board was right to do what they did. And when it comes to accountability, that is a state agency. I used to run a state agency, as you know,
right,
for more than 17 years. I believe in accountability. You've heard me say, one of my, what I thought is a mission of mine was to remove myths to destroy myths. And it's a myth that Sacramento State cannot be managed well. It was for years. Maceo Nance was an excellent president. Andrew Hugenic was an excellent president. Now, it's kind of funny that Andrew Hugenic, which was fired by the board at South Carolina State, has just signed a new four-year contract down at Alabama A&M. He's become one of the most popular HBCU presidents in the country. He never should have been terminated. And it's kind of funny. The grounds they used to terminate him was because they had too many students. They had 700 more students to show up for a freshman class than they had planned for. Because the school had an excellent reputation, they had just hosted a national presidential debate. It was riding high. And they went on history not knowing what impact that was having on incoming freshmen. And rather than getting the 500 or 600 freshmen that they usually got, they got 700 more. And then the board used that as a lack of preparation on the part of the president and fired him. Now they're saying you got a president with falling enrollment. Didn't he need 4,300 students? They got less than 3,000 students. And with this kind of cloud hanging over them, they are going to be less than 2,000 students come September if something dramatic is not done to turn the fortunes of the school around. So my wife and I sat down and wrote a letter to the alumni and shared it with the media on yesterday that we support what they're doing at the Ways and Means Committee, and we hope that the Budget and Control Board would put in place a 5 to 7 member or whatever number of retired college presidents, executives, who will sit down and hire a CEO to run that school for a couple of years and for them to set the policy for a couple of years. Because I think it would be a bad thing for the Budget and Control Board to hold on to the administration of the school for too long, because you set up a conflict of interest between that school as well as University of South Carolina, Clemson, etc.
Sure.
The Budget Control Board should put in place some policymakers and a CEO to do that while they carry on the state's business. Because if you don't, it will lose being a historical black college and university, because there's not a single person of HBCU or HBCU graduate on the Budget Control Board, and nobody on the Budget Control Board who looks like me.
Well, you know, I think that's right, and I was thinking about it after reading your letter yesterday afternoon that you did send out talking about these points. And, you know, we have some excellent talent right here. You know, Dr. Joe Patton is kind of looking to retire. I think that he might be a good one, having worked with Gleams and run that agency and brought that back to a very viable one just in our area.
Well, that may be true. There are the letter I sent out mentioned other people as well. You know what? South Carolina State has graduated past in what we call the officers, general officers ranks, the highest number of African-American generals in any school in the United States of America.
Well, Jeff and I were talking about that last night, and one of the comments that my husband Jeff made was that South Carolina State should reach out to the military for veterans. That would be a good, quick way to start bringing in people right there.
Oh, absolutely. Colonel Alex Conyers, I think is his name, wrote a letter that was printed in the Orangeburg papers, I think it was last Saturday, on that subject. He is currently in the military. Abraham Turner, who used to be the commanding officer at Fort Jackson, is retired. General Stanley, who was a major general in the United States Marine Corps, and, by the way, ran the largest college scholarship program in the country, is a graduate of South Carolina State, retired from the military, and he even at one time, after Hugenin left, approached the school administrators about his availability to be president of the school. They never granted him even an interview. And he's one of the most qualified people in the United States of America. Wow. He finished number two to run the largest public college program in the state of Pennsylvania. These kinds of people are out there who've got experience as administrators, who've got experience running things, who've got experience raising money, and they are graduates of the institution. So it's, and they've got love for the institution. They have no business floating around out here while we fish around the country looking for people who may or may not have the kind of respect for the legacy that HBCUs need from a president.
Sure. You know, one of the things that really helped Lander University up here was a docent program that they put in place over here. Saved the university thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars by getting people that had the love, just like what you're talking about, and helped out with so many different projects, from fundraising to actually running offices. And they were retired, and they looked for something to do, and they wanted to give back. This made a big difference in Lander University right here.
Well, that's exactly right. I'll tell you what, I've always admired Dr. Jackson, who's up there for years, he and his wife, I thought were tremendous custodians and stewards and tremendous role models for the school. That's the kind of person that we need at South Carolina State, not somebody who's got political support with one party or another, but someone who has love, respect, and understand the mission of HBCUs. Let me say something about HBCUs that I don't think people take into account. I've seen all this foolishness out there about what the four-year graduation rate is for South Carolina State. My brother John, a math major, very smart guy, businessman today, he took 5 years to graduate. I took 4.5 years to graduate. So if that's standard, what your four-year graduation rate would be, I would not have factored into that. My brother would not have factored into that. Just because,
Congressman Clyburn, I don't think it's possible for anybody to graduate in 4 years unless that is absolutely the only thing they do. And most colleges even hold a course that the students need. They only do it every other year or something. So that forces them to stay at least one more semester.
You are exactly right.
Exactly.
And when you've got students going to South Carolina State who are first-time college students, they are working jobs, they are working in the summer, they're doing all kinds of stuff. They stretch it out 5 or 6 years to graduate.
Right.
And so this whole thing of evaluating a school, as they've been doing in these letters to the various media about South Carolina State's four-year graduation rate, even if they now stay there for 2 years and never graduate, they get a certain amount of sophistication on a college campus, they ain't going to get anywhere else.
Right. That is so true. I mean, students, I just don't think, can graduate in 4 years from any school.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you know, I just saw a night before last the graduation rate from the University of Utah as being something like 13%.
Right.
The four-year graduation. And I don't think you're going to find many HBCU people at the University of Utah.
Right, exactly. Now, you know, one of the other things that we were talking about last night, getting ready for your interview here today, is I understand that the food down there in your food service is excellent. And, you know, food service is such a great major for students because Marriott we found in the Wall Street Journal where Marriott is going to need 7,500 supervisors over the next 5 years.
Not only that, South Carolina State, and this has not been written about anywhere, and I don't know if any the people you talk to know this. South Carolina State has a very strong, creditable nuclear engineer. It is the only HBCU in the country that offers a nuclear engineering major. And I'm not talking about just offering a major. You go down to Savannah River Plant, you go down to the over to the Virgil Sumner nuclear plant. You go to any nuclear plant in this country, and they will tell you that the students they get from South Carolina State are excellent. And it's a nuclear engineering major and is not offered by any other HBCU in the United States of America. South Carolina State had the highest ranked speech pathology program in the United States of America. My classmate, Harold Powell, made it so. The most renowned in the United States of America. I can go down the line. The biggest number of general officers out there, African-American general officers from South Carolina State, nuclear engineers from South Carolina State, and I just said the most renowned speech pathologist from South Carolina State. I can go down there. Nobody talks about that. Well, I saw an article on the front page of the newspaper yesterday talk about one of the bright spots at South Carolina State was its basketball team. Bull. The brightest spot, and no point intended here, is their nuclear engineering program.
You know, that is awesome, and those are the things, and that's why it is important to get the right management in there to do what's necessary to fix South Carolina State so they can thrive.
Absolutely. It is all there. And the students are there. I talked to students last night. I'm going to meet them with more students on Monday. These people have a passion for that school that you would not believe. My own grandson wanted to go there and didn't go because he could not get his acceptance letter on time. The school needs efficiency built into it, and the lack of funding is a real big issue at the school, but funding has got nothing to do with vision. You can have vision and be broke. And there's as you know, my background is in theology, though I didn't study it. I've lived it, and I live by scripture. And that old proverb, where there is no vision, the people perish. And the school, the students at South Carolina State are perishing because the leadership has no vision.
And that's, you know what? That is with anything, whether it's my Sharp Facets jewelry business here or my radio business, you got to have vision.
You're exactly right. I've been in your part of your studio. I've been in your business
right.
Twice, and I've come away every time. My wife was with me the last time, and I said to her, it takes real vision to set up an operation like they have there. So that is just an incredible operation, and it's the work of visionary leadership, and I congratulate you for it.
Thank you very much. Now let's talk about a couple other issues. Fort Jackson, what's going to happen there? You know, they're talking about closing it, cutting it way back. What is your what insight can you give us about Fort Jackson?
I don't think that you'll ever see Fort Jackson closed. I think there's always evaluations taking place. I remember the last time we had closings. What we have BRAC, that is the Base Realignment Committee, evaluating our military installations. They were saying the Shore Air Force Base is under threat of being closed. Well, it's now a joint use facility. Shaw is now the home for the Third Army. Excuse me. So I think that the plus-up we did at Fort Jackson in the last two BRACs. I think it's going to be built upon. Certainly, resources, money will be competed for, but I don't think you're going to find any closings in the cards.
You know, one of the things that we are constantly amazed by is how many people retired to South Carolina who at one point came through Fort Jackson. And that was part of, because of the experience at Fort Jackson and liking the climate and all the other good things that we have here. That's why they came back here to retire.
Hello?
Hello.
Okay.
You there? Yeah.
You're exactly right. They retired from there. And the same thing over in Sumter, my hometown. But the people from Sports Base who retire and live in Sumter and become tremendous citizens and contributors to the community over there. And I think you're going to have the same thing now that the Third Army is there. You're going to find people there. General Brooks, who headed up the Third Army, is now gone, but I've talked to him. He loves Sumter, and I won't be a bit surprised to see him and his family come back to Sumter after retirement. So when people get a chance to come into communities that love and revere their military surroundings, like here in Columbia with Fort Jackson, over in Sumter with Shaw Air Force Base, in Beaufort where I was last night, hanging around with some retired Marines down there. I'm talking about sergeant majors. I'm not talking about officers. Mm-hmm. These people love these communities when they get a chance to live in them. And I don't think that you're going to see anybody turning their backs on these communities when they get a chance to come back to them.
Well, that is good news to hear. Can I have time for one more question?
Yes.
Okay, one more question. You know, the immigration is a big, big, big thing out there. And, of course, I wanted to discuss with you not about the amnesty program, but about the fact that I know you believe in securing the borders and you believe in some issues that are not that dissimilar from what some of the Republicans believe. Why can't an immigration policy be cobbled together between those of like mind that do have issues that you agree on and put one forth?
Well, there's no reason we can't except that people are trying to score political points. The fact of the matter is, I don't see that President Obama has advocated one single thing that was not advocated by both Presidents Bush and President Clinton, but because Obama has proposed it, they have find issue with it. It is that way on immigration. Is that way on foreign policy? There was a discussion this morning of why Obama will not use certain terms in referring to the terrorists called ISIS. Well, George Bush refused to use that term as well. Nobody said a word when George Bush refused to use it. Now that President Obama is refusing to use it, they've got these front headlines all over the country about why won't he call it what it is. That's what you say it is. He may have enough intelligence. When I say intelligence, I'm talking about our people who are out there who are our spies, if you please, to know the difference.
Sure.
And so it's just because there is an element among some in the media who are going to oppose whatever President Obama proposes.
So, I understand what you're saying there. I wish we would just end this by doing what's necessary, and I know that probably that's the direction we're going, but I'd like to get there sooner rather than later at this point. From where I see it, and I did see the latest poll that says more Americans are now for doing what's necessary to crush ISIS, to crush this faction.
Absolutely. But, you know, what we've got to do this in such a way that we bring our allies along. You can't go rushing into things. We rushed into Iraq and see what it got us. We got to do this in such a way that we bring our allies along so that when the time comes for us to exit, we got a strategy in place that will allow us to exit. We went into Iraq without an exit strategy, and you see what it got us. So I think that the president is wise to go slow. That's why you see turtles all over my house and all over my offices, because I believe in being methodical. I believe in thinking through what you're going to do. Go slow and don't go rushing into things, because we learn from that old fable of the tortoise and the hare. He who rushes in or rushes along may not win in the end. Slow and steady is what gets you there.
Okay. Do you know that I raise turtles?
No. You do? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you. The next time you're here, I'll make you a present.
I've got about 100 turtles around my house in my offices. And you know what one of my mottos is, and it's hanging on the wall in my office up in Washington. Behold the turtle. He makes progress only when he sticks his neck out.
That is so true. That is so awesome. But do you think that there's any possibility of, or is it going to go totally down the line of the courts and everything with the immigration policy? Do you think that Congress, the House, will try to do something or not? You know, I was thinking about this fence. I just want to throw this idea out. Thinking about the fence, and they're talking about how much it's going to cost. How about if we hired some Mexican labor?
Well, you know what? I think that we have to make sure that we keep separate Homeland Security and immigration.
Okay.
They're not the same thing.
No, they're not.
No. We have to secure the homeland no matter what border we may be addressing.
Right.
We've had aggression at the northern border. Nobody talks about people who have tried to get into this country coming down through Canada, Nova Scotia, other places coming from the north. Everybody keeps focusing on Mexico and Mexicans and people coming over the southern border. That is because we've allowed that border to be porous, because those people come in, they're working on our farms, they're working at our resorts. You go down to Hilton Head and see how much Spanish you hear. You go down to Kiowa, and there's Caribbeans working there. So we got homeland security problems that got nothing to do with immigration. And so we've got to deal with immigration separately from homeland security, and that's why I think it is very, very problematic for us to be tying immigration to the reauthorization of the Department of Homeland Security.
That's a very, very good point. And you know what? I always appreciate our conversations here on the air and when you get to come in studio with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to the next one.
All right. Thank you so much,
Congressman.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.